Okay, we're at the end of the third chapter. Teresa cautions that if the words or words, if she's talking about these locutions that she's been having, she cautions that if the words are words of favor and consolation, the soul should guard against thinking that it is better than others. The more it hears words of favor, the more humble it should be. If not, then it should believe the words are not from God. One thing very certain is that when the spirit is from God, the soul esteems itself less, the greater the favor granted, and it has more awareness of its sins and is more forgetful of its own gain, and its will and memory are employed more in seeking only the honor of God, nor does it think about its own profit, and it walks with greater fear lest its will deviate in anything, and with greater certitude that it never deserved any of these favors but deserved hell. The soul does not walk fearfully but with confidence in the mercy of God, of the Lord, who is faithful and will not let the devil deceive it, although walking with fear is always good. So what she's afraid of here looks like is that when you start getting these favors from God, you think you're better than anybody else because he's reaching out and touching you, you know. And so you get slow-headed, and then you lose all the benefits of it because you get pride, you get pride instead of humility. You know? And so a lot of times, God will give people favors that they don't really feel, that they don't realize they're having. Like every time we receive the Eucharist, we're receiving the body and blood of Christ. We're receiving his divine life within us, but we don't feel anything. Because if we started doing that, it might cause pride, and you know, and that's always a danger.
Now, how does this fear, walking in fear, coordinate or juxtapose with believing the accuser? Because it says in Revelation,
you mean the devil?
He stands before the Father, accusing the brethren without ceasing, and a lot of times people incorporate that and believe all the accusations.
Well, the biggest weapon we have against that is the sacrament of confession, reconciliation,
and then believing
that it happened, that takes away the sin, you know. And but Satan knows what you've done. He knows what your sins are, and he's the great accuser. So he'll sit there. You're a terrible person. I'm accusing you. Look at what this terrible thing was you did. You know. And you just have to keep in mind all the time that you've already been to confession, it's been forgiven. Mm-hmm. And one of the saints asked God, now, it wasn't a saint, it was a priest. He was talking to this lady who was a mystic, trying to test her to see if she was for real, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he said, next time Jesus talks to you, ask him, what is the greatest sin that I ever committed that has been forgiven? Mm. And so she did. She asked him, and Jesus said, I don't remember. So once he forgives it, you know, he puts it aside. Yeah. Why drag it around, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's the kind of thing we should always carry around within us, that once we've been to confession, don't let a past sin act like a millstone around your neck.
Sometimes I walk out and I go, oh, I forgot to say something.
Well, what does the priest say? For these and all the sins of your of your life. You know,
the thing I was going to ask, so she's afraid that you're getting all these favors, that you know, you're going to get like a big head, but then God is giving you the grace that you don't even realize that you're getting all these favors?
Yeah, because what he does is try to... it goes back to those two things, humility and self-knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. So humility is a big thing. Self-knowledge is a big thing. And the self-knowledge is not only just where you are spiritually, but it's where you are in comparison to Christ. Mm-hmm. Okay, because he says, imitate me, because I'm meek and humble of heart. And so you always look at how close are you to Christ in terms of where you are spiritually. You're never going to get all the way, right? Because he's God. Mm-hmm. but you try to, but he does say, imitate me. And so you try to imitate him and you try to get as close. So when you're looking at yourself in self-knowledge, you're always looking at, if I stand next to Christ and he's up here, where am I on this scale? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm never going to be up there equal because he's God, but I'm going to be somewhere, and he's calling me to get as close as I can. Mm-hmm. And so you're always comparing yourself. And she tells us also in here, as we heard before, that you always know how much you love God by how much you love your neighbor. Mm-hmm. That's the big test, because people say, oh, I love God. Of course I love God, you know. I love God tremendously. He's great, wonderful. I want to hug him and kiss him all the time, you know. You always think you love God. But she says the way you really know you love God is by how much you love your neighbor.
That's true, yeah.
And why is that? Because he loves them. Mm-hmm. You can't say you love God right. and say I don't love somebody else that he loves right. just as yeah. much as he loves me.
Right. Well, Jesus said, didn't he say that in the Bible? Not everyone who says, Lord, Lord, shall come into the kingdom.
Exactly.
Only those who do the will of my Father.
That's right.
You've got to put your money where your mouth is.
That's right. So all those things are things to keep in mind, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what Teresa's getting at here. He says, you know, the greater the favor granted, you have more awareness of your sins. So the more he's giving you, the more you realize how unworthy you are to really have it. Yeah. That he's given you something very, very special, and that you didn't do anything to deserve it. Mm-hmm. But he's given it to you anyway.
And you know what I think? The more I always say the older you get, the more you see your sins, because you have more life and more sins. But it makes you more humble.
Yeah.
It's a benefit.
I think you have a quieter life the older you get.
Pardon me? Yeah.
I think you have a quieter life, so you have more time to reflect. And you're not, I'm thinking, like a man is going to work all day, and then he's coming home, and then he's doing all this other stuff, you know, and then, I don't know.
Then you retire and you have time to think.
That's why some people don't retire and they just keep going.
It depends on your personality.
Yeah,
you could still
too.
Be home doing nothing but go, and not thinking. You know, I think it depends on the person.
Sometimes an illness will force you to think.
Yeah. That's true, too.
Reminds me of a conversation we had last night.
I'm full of the Holy Spirit. I touched all those bones. And then when I got caught, I got cold, my husband was like, it's because you touched all those bones.
And so the other half of that coin is, not only do you see that you really did deserve this great gift from God, but that because he was willing to give it to you, you now feel a greater impetus to give him more glory and honor. And then you do that, you know, within yourself, but you also do that to others. You try to convince, to explain to others and convince others how great and wonderful God is, so they'll seek him too. Because he wants all of us. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize that the kingdom of God is not a place. It's us. It's a king. You know, if my kingdom is just an open desert and nobody's there, it's not much of a kingdom. But if it's full of people, hey, I've got a big kingdom now. You know. And he wants the biggest kingdom he can have in heaven. And that's why Satan tries so hard to get people to go to hell. So that it makes his kingdom one person smaller every time he gets somebody to go to hell. And that's the only way he can hurt God.
Sure.
That's the only way.
There's a country western song that says, if you don't love Jesus, go to hell. That's not quite the spirit.
I don't know which that says you need to make a fool of yourself for God.
And so you got two parts to this whole thing. Being thankful for the gift, and realizing that you didn't really do anything to deserve it. So it should make you more humble, and it should make you want to get as close to God as you can possibly get, and then recognize that you owe him that much more than you did before he gave you the gift, because he's now showered you with this wonderful gift that he's given you, and so you owe him something back. And she mentions that a few times throughout the book, where we owe him so much because of what he did for us, what he sacrificed for us.
Even if we don't get a gift.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, even if we don't get any gifts at all, we still owe him a lot just because of what he did for us.
Do you know what the priest said? What was his name? Father Peter. I was just asking in the parking lot. He said we had, if we have a heart of gratitude, it erases two sins. And one of them was worry, but I don't know what the other one was. And someone asked me that. I don't remember. Does anybody remember? Did you see his homily? Here's his homily. The father from Eastern Europe.
Yeah, the guy that gave the homily on Sunday, he was... Mm-hmm. It was pretty good.
Oh, who was that?
He was Father wonderful.
It's Father Peter. He's a Redemptorist priest. He's a missionary.
And he was, saying, if you
and he was talking about
gratitude,
the different things they do as missionaries in Eastern Europe and everything.
And it will fight two sins. Right. And one of them was like worry or something. And then it was another one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He's from New Jersey. Somebody asked me. At a parish. And I said,
That's where he's assigned right now.
Yeah. He did say something like that.
Yeah.
But he's from Poland.
He's
Poland, originally,
He's from Poland, It's pretty good.
That reminds me of the guy who says, my wife is always complaining about me, and she says, I've got two big problems. One, I don't pay attention, and something else.
You're right. That's so bad. You just have to remember when you're telling a joke.
Story of my life.
But I did contact the ICS again. And they said that the brochures are at the printer.
Woo.
And they should be out ready in November.
Okay.
So as soon as they come out, we'll get those for us.
Good.
It's the prayer of recollection that Teresa came up with.
Oh, St. Teresa's prayer.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
This is, I'm a little mixed up. I know that I have that folded, the little one you're talking about, because that's what we give to the newcomers. But then someone showed me the new one. And it's
been revised.
But it's completely different. It, to me... Now, maybe this is a different little pamphlet, but it has nothing to do with the...
It's a revision.
I think I have. I should have brought it in. It's nothing about the prayer of recollection.
Oh,
it's
really?
More about the Carmelite way of life or something. Going, what?
Bring it in next
week. Well, we'll find out.
Yeah. I hope I can find
We will it. Critique it for you.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. It's kind of strange.
Okay, chapter 4. In this chapter, Teresa treats of God suspending the soul in prayer with rapture, ecstasy, or transport, which are all the same in my opinion, she says, and how great courage is necessary to receive sublime favors from His Majesty. So she talked about locutions, and now she's going to talk about this rapture or ecstasy when you're kind of caught up in something. And that when I read that introduction to it, the first thing that came to my mind was the book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
At the very beginning of the book, John says, I was caught up in the spirit, you know, into heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw everything going on, the mass going on in heaven, and everything like that. And so it's that kind of thing. And then St. Paul also talks about being caught up into the third heaven, you know, in one of his letters and all. So different mystics have experienced this kind of ecstasy where you don't know what's happening until all of a sudden somebody's got you and they're taking you somewhere. And it's kind of, the first time it happens, it's kind of scary because you don't know what's going on. You don't know where you are, where you're going, or what for, or anything else. And so it's kind of a new experience, you know. After it's been happening for a little while, I guess you get kind of used to it and you say, okay, here we go again. You know? But the first time it kind of is a shock, and it shocked her the first time.
Has that been happening to you?
No, I have not been caught up into heaven or anything like that.
You know what I just thought?
I'm not worthy of that yet.
I shouldn't go over that. If someone had too many drinks, like say you had 4 or 5 drinks, you wouldn't know where you are. You'd be out of it, you know, but it's not spiritual.
I don't think we're caught up into heaven because we get drunk.
No, I'm not quite. For the other end.
Okay, so 6401, she says, in referring to the trials previously discussed, Teresa says, all these sufferings are meant to increase one's desire to enjoy the spouse. And His Majesty is enabling the soul to have the courage to be joined with so great a Lord and to take Him as a spouse. Why do you think Jesus uses suffering to increase our desire for him?
Because we may feel more.
Jim, is it because he suffered so much for us on the cross, so that helps us be more united?
Sure. Yeah, sure. That's one reason.
Mm-hmm. We feel more helpless when we suffer.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You feel more helpless when you're suffering.
So you reach out for something to alleviate
sure.
it.
Sure.
Yeah. And you know you're becoming more like him through suffering. That's
right.
The only way you can.
And it also varies so much, too. You know, your suffering is different from my suffering and yours and everybody else's. Mm-hmm. And Jesus says, take up your cross daily and follow me. Mm-hmm. It means every day there's some kind of cross you're going to deal with. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a little bitty one, sometimes a real big one.
Yeah.
But you're going to deal with some kind of a cross.
Yeah.
And so we take up our cross. And Jesus chooses that terminology. You know, every time he says something, you got to pay so close attention to what he says. Because he always chooses the very perfect word. And he's very economical in what he says. He never just elaborates and goes on forever like some of these preachers do. You know, he's very succinct in everything he says. So he says, take up your cross and follow me.
I mean, there's so much meaning in his words. Like,
yeah.
You know, when I was younger and you hear, I thirst, I'm just thinking, okay, what's a glass of water? And then you read this whole thing from Mother Teresa, what I thirst means. And you're like, oh boy, was I clueless.
Yeah, right. And so when he says, take up your cross, you think, well, why was he on his cross?
Mm-hmm.
He was on his cross for our salvation.
Yeah.
His cross was always redemptive suffering. And so he says, take up your cross and follow me. He's saying, join your suffering to mine, however small or however great it happens to be, because I'm going to let your suffering have the same value as my suffering.
Yeah.
Not as great, but the same purpose.
Yeah.
So our little suffering has redemptive value for people who need redemption. And so he lets us participate in his redemptive suffering by offering our suffering to him.
Every now and then, though, you hear someone say, you're waste if you don't do that, offer it with his.
Yeah.
You're wasting all that suffering.
Yeah.
So it really makes me feel badly. And you think now what these people are going through.
Yeah.
Is that all a waste?
If they don't offer it up.
Well,
it
they don't.
Be.
They're not even Jewish. What is the other one?
The Arabs, yeah.
The Arabs.
Yeah.
You know, that's just confusing.
It's such a waste, yeah.
I know God
yeah.
works us all out, but...
And look what they're going through over there in Israel now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I also think,
horrendous
like,
suffering.
You know, in your childhood or teens, you know, whatever suffering, and you don't realize that you could do this, can you go back and say, well, Jesus, take all that suffering I went through years ago...
Why not?
...and I didn't realize...
Why not? He operates outside of time.
Yeah,
you know? Well, so...
Yeah.
And besides, the memory of it still makes you suffer.
Right. So I think about some of those people, maybe time will tell that they come to the faith in a different way. And
they could.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we could be intercessors for them, right?
Well, that's the only thing God do every minute, I think.
Yeah,
we have to just think that they're able to use this suffering or to survive it. And I just think God must be communicating with them some way, like he does with people who are in severe suffering.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense.
Yeah. They must be praying. They must be praying.
Well, and I did hear a father calling out to God, and he was not a Jew, even a Muslim. So they do have a communication, and God has to.
And that was what? That's not the two brothers, and the one went to the Arab world. And
right.
So... and he was a favored son too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So it's not like they're lost.
Right.
I just think it's a different path or something.
I asked about
Jesus,
that last week.
I don't know how it works out.
I didn't come to that.
And he works with
him. He said because he was a son
of
God.
He was a son of Abraham, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But he also said, my covenant is with Isaac. So even though
which one are we with?
So
we're
even.
Isaac.
So even though he made Ishmael a great nation, his covenant was with Isaac.
Yeah.
And that's the important distinction there.
Yeah.
Well, but I feel sorry for people who, when they begin to suffer, want to have euthanasia and commit suicide.
Yeah. I think there's
instead of using that suffering and They just waste it.
Yeah. And you can't talk to them either.
And you've got the healing community now who is involved in killing people.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Crazy.
But you think of all those, just think of somebody that's born in that faith that does not know anything of a child.
Yeah.
I mean, you have no choice.
Yeah.
You're not aware. So
yeah.
God is reaching them
somehow. Well, it's up to God.
Yeah.
You know, that is nothing we can do anything about.
Mm-hmm.
Except pray for them.
Yeah.
Just intercede, for them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he uses suffering, but it also increases our the sufferings also increase our desire for him, because by accepting the suffering that he gives us, and he's always going to choose the suffering he wants us to have.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we forget too, mm-hmm. unless we're really stupid and get drunk and get in a car wreck or something.
Mm-hmm.
When we receive suffering, it's something that he has given us. He's always going to give us the grace to deal with it, along with the suffering.
Mm.
Okay, so the suffering is a gift.
Because it can lead to something good.
Because it can lead to other things, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever suffering he gives us, and is different from every one of us, is a grace that we can use to get closer and closer and closer to him. And so our sufferings draw us to him, because he suffered, we suffer, so it's kind of like we're suffering together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, too, all of our sufferings will allow us, if we accept it, is to grow in particular virtues. It'll stretch us in specific virtues that we need.
That could be,
I was thinking when you were talking about the suffering, I went to the Catholic school, and I can remember first, second grade, the nuns always said, offer it up to Jesus. We grew up with offering. That's one thing was
instilled in us. My mother said that every day. Offer it up.
Every ache and pain and everything.
You stub your toes, offer it up.
Now my husband
never heard
says
any that to live
in life. Oh, I heard an interesting speaker. His name was Kevin Wells. And he knew that he had done, you know, lived a good life, but he felt he was lukewarm. So he came from a family with very prominent priests who made major marks, especially in the D.C. area. And he prayed for violence so that he would be able to offer up suffering. And he ended up with a brain aneurysm right away, like a month later.
Oh, wow.
And it was just his whole journey. And it changed him. He said, I knew that would change me.
Yeah.
But I never heard of anybody asking for violence.
No.
People
I not do that.
Yeah. I don't think we should, personally, this is my own personal opinion, I don't think we should do that. I don't think we should try to choose the cross that God gives us.
Yeah.
I think we ought to let him choose our cross because he knows what's best for us. We don't know what's best for us.
Right.
You know, he does.
The Romans picked Jesus' cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was always in control.
Yeah.
If you look at what happens during the Passion, he is always in control.
Yeah.
The kind of wounds he suffered and everything else, he was always in control of what was going on there. Because he's the Paschal Lamb. What do you have to do to the Paschal Lamb before you can cook it? You got to bleed it completely. So he had to engineer his own wounds so that he was bled completely. And then on the cross, while he's being sacrificed as our Paschal Lamb, you can hear the lambs being slaughtered in Jerusalem for the Passover. So while he was being slaughtered, the lambs were being slaughtered. He was our Paschal Lamb.
I remember watching that Jesus of Nazareth movie, like every Easter.
The Passion.
Jesus of Nazareth. You know, with that one actor from another time frame.
Yeah.
And I'd always be watching it as a teen, and I'm really like, why doesn't Jesus argue with any of them? And it used to drive me crazy. Like, you know, like, wouldn't you, when they put that crown on, wouldn't you, like, rip it off and just, like, whip it at them? Or, you know what I mean? And it took me a long time to understand that, you know, he was his humility and, you know, he's a victim.
Yeah. And it was the plan of his father. I mean, it was the whole plan.
He knew I was like, why didn't he talk back to him? Why didn't he defend himself? That was, as a teen, I was like...
Because you didn't have Sister Mary Richard in grade school
to explain that. Right. My mother's Protestant converted, so she didn't know either.
Yeah. But all those things, you know, become important to realize. And just when you look at the kind of wounds he suffered, at the beginning, you know, with the scourging and everything else, they were all designed to make him so weak he couldn't resist anything else. So whatever they did to him, he had no way to resist. He was just so physically weak. It's amazing to me that he lasted 3 hours on the cross, you know?
Or could carry that cross.
Yeah.
But he could only do that because of the divine angels,
you know, helping
people
him.
Sometimes think.
Yeah. Yeah. Humanity, we just want it to be over.
Right.
That's not what
happened. You couldn't do it as a human. You would probably die on the way.
Yeah.
I read some book where he got the grace, of course, to go through that.
But all those things, you know, everything that happened, every single wound was designed to make him that Paschal lamb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the final one with the lance in the side, the last bit of blood he had in his heart, you know, was gone.
And each, I think I read that each suffering that he endured was for a certain sin. In the world. We know that each sin you can associate with why this happened and why that happened because of our own
sins. if you read the 12 years prayers of St. Bridget, they mentioned that, you know.
Yeah.
It's that the scourging was for sins of the flesh, and
those
and
that we don't
the crown of thorns was for thoughts, evil thoughts and stuff, you know. So everyone was kind of associated with some kind of evil in the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So those kind of things. So this whole idea of suffering is something a lot of people don't really spend a lot of time thinking about, but there's a lot of rich meaning there. And so don't go try to pick your own cross.
Mm-hmm.
Take the one Jesus gives you because that's the one he knows you need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the most beneficial for you.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think Teresa says Jesus is enabling the soul to have the courage to be joined to Jesus? Why does it take courage to experience an ecstasy? Why wouldn't we leap for the opportunity? Just, hey, that'd be great to go fly through the air and go up somewhere.
I think because you know down deep that if you get close to Jesus, he's going to transform you. You're going to have to change your life, and you're going to get suffering. I mean, you're going to. Mm-hmm. It's not easy.
We try to please people, and those two things don't go together.
Yeah.
You got to be totally honest with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, if he does give somebody an ecstasy like this, the first time it's going to really. You're not going to know what's going on, you know? Because he doesn't say, okay, now it's time. I'm going to come down in 5 minutes and give you an ecstasy. Get prepared. Put your coat and tie on, you know, and all this kind of stuff. He doesn't do that, you know? He just, boom, he just takes you up.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a scary thing. But it takes courage to do that because you don't know what it takes courage because of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
When it happens, you have no idea what's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of, okay, what's gonna go on, you know?
Yeah.
So you just got to have, a part of that courage is trust.
Mm-hmm.
Trust in him that he's never going to do anything to you that's spiritually detrimental to you.
Yeah.
Everything is for your spiritual good.
I guess that happens to people who have near-death experiences. You know, they're taken to a different place, usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't want to come back. They have to make
their decision. I know Father has said before in homilies that people don't want to, trust in Jesus or whatever because they don't want to change their life because...
Yeah. They're comfortable.
They're comfortable. And, you know, the change is hard, obviously. And
they definitely don't want to be a victim soul.
No, nobody in this country
and I think
does.
Too, they want to be in control.
Right.
They want to know the whole situation.
Yes. Yeah.
And what's...
When my first wife, Mara, died, I started reading about near-death experiences, Michael Brown and...
Mm-hmm.
It was very good, and my Jewish friend up in Baltimore called me and said, how are you handling it? I said, I'm reading about near-death experiences.
Did she have one?
He said, well...
Your wife, your first wife, did she have a near-death?
Not that I know of.
Mm-hmm. Good.
But he said, I think I had one of those.
Mm-hmm.
He was very proud of his Jewish heritage. Mm-hmm. I said, what happened? He said, one time I almost paid retail.
We're waiting for this near-death experience.
We just need to figure it out. But now you should read Roy Schumann, right?
You're
what's
right.
His book? What's the title of his book?
Salvation is from the Jews.
Oh, that's. Have you read that?
Oh, you got to read that. That's
fabulous.
A great book.
Salvation for the Jews.
Salvation is from the Jews. Roy Schumann. Schoeman.
Okay.
There's a lady doctor that had one.
It's an excellent book. What?
Didn't come out that long ago. I think her name was Dr. Neal or something, and she went.
Oh yeah.
Kayaking or something.
Oh, I read that book.
Over.
Yeah.
She was trapped.
Yeah.
She was underwater, caught underwater.
Mm-hmm. And then she had a near-death experience, and she knew one of her children was going to die.
Yeah.
And that child
They even had
did.
Her on the morning shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I read it, but I don't remember.
And a lot
much.
Of those experiences were similar. You know, they all went through the mm-hmm. tunnel and the light. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, 642.
642.
Talking about this courage thing, Teresa kind of answers the last question in this section, saying that we might not see the need for courage, but that if God does not give us the courage, it would be impossible for you to receive that favor. Not exactly a clear answer, but she might provide the complete answer later on, so we can keep reading and see what she tells us. Teresa says we will understand that this comes about when he gives it raptures that draw it out of its senses. For if we were to see itself so near this great majesty while in its senses, it would perhaps die. Mm-hmm. And so, what do they say in the Old Testament? That if you see the face of God, you cannot live?
Mm-hmm.
And so she's afraid of that same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If we're still in our senses and we see this rapture with God, we might not be able to survive it.
Well, you know, it wasn't with my eyes, but when my daughter was healed of MS 40 years ago in front of everybody, when Annie prayed over her, you knew it. And I said, it's easier to pray that God will do it. I mean, you know, he can do everything. But to see it happen, you believed it, but your mind couldn't grasp
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
The first impression I had was that my head opened up and I had a hole in my head and it was
wow.
open. And I said, you couldn't process, even though you believe and you saw it, the body couldn't
yeah.
say, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was weird.
It's what are human yeah. limits, I guess.
You couldn't.
Because when you say yeah. things to people about, you know, miracles or whatever,
they
the first answer is, well, maybe it was this or maybe it was
right.
that. It or wasn't really.
And neighbors
miracle.
Couldn't believe it, and they were
yeah.
Catholic. And they said, oh, she never had it. I said, yeah, she faked it.
Yeah.
It was
kind of hard to fake MS.
Yeah. You know.
So Teresa's beginning to give us a sense of the infinite greatness and majesty of God and to be united with that majesty, something only God can do for us. And which at this state in a relationship is a huge unknown, takes great courage. You are being called into the presence of and into union with the one who said be, and the universe was created, and with it time. God, who created us in time as the object of his love, is inviting us to unite with him who is eternity. Teresa then says she will tell us about some of the different kinds of raptures. Do you think you would want to be in your senses as you are brought into the union so you can fully experience it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the experience takes you out of your senses.
Yeah, I don't think I would.
No.
Because I think you can only experience it in a spirit sense.
Yeah.
If you had a body, you couldn't really experience
right.
it.
If you die in the process, it gets better, though.
That could be.
You know, you go to heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm contradicting myself. If you had this type of, you couldn't, what, no. You couldn't take it in. You couldn't take the whole thing in only because we're human.
We're limited.
And we cannot take
yeah.
it. Well, that's
yeah.
spiritual.
Right.
You just can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, I had a similar situation mm-hmm. where my son, I watched my son get, he ran across the street in a busy city.
Ooh.
And a car hit him. He was only five.
Oh.
And I saw him fly like 18 feet.
Wow.
And I started to collapse. and he didn't even have a scratch.
Yeah.
And I almost couldn't handle.
Oh, I got goosebumps.
I just, my whole body, goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mother Angelica had that too, when she was a child. Oh, my God. Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Oh. Now it's in my legs. My whole body is
getting over your sweater.
The 643, Teresa then speaks about a trigger experience that leads into one kind of rapture. So she's talking about a trigger, something that causes this, like pulling a trigger on a gun and making it go off. The soul, even though not in prayer, is touched by some word it remembers or hears about God. It seems that His Majesty from the interior of the soul makes the spark we mentioned increase, for He is moved with compassion in seeing the soul suffer so long a time from its desire. All burnt up, the soul is renewed like the phoenix, and one can devoutly believe that its faults are pardoned. Now that it is so pure, the Lord joins it with Himself, without anyone understanding what is happening except these two. Nor does the soul itself understand in a way that afterwards can be explained. Yet it does have interior understanding. This is what Teresa will later describe as an intellectual vision in Chapter 8, and she'll deal with imaginative visions in Chapter 9. So she's talking about an experience that the soul has, but there are no words that the soul can use to describe the experience. You know it happens, but you can't explain exactly what's going on. Because it's so totally out of your experience, out of your realm of experience. Does this indicate how God deals with each soul as a unique individual?
Yeah, must be. He deals with each person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a fun look.
Now she says, the soul, even though not in prayer, is touched by some word. Is she saying this doesn't happen in prayer, or that it doesn't have to happen in prayer?
It wouldn't have to happen in prayer.
It doesn't have to happen, yeah. It can happen anytime.
I can have anything happen anytime.
Yeah.
It can happen in the right of the middle of your prayer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or it could happen when you're walking down the street.
Yeah.
Just don't jaywalk, because you might get hit by a car. How is this, or is it similar to what is experienced in Lectio Divina? You know what Lectio Divina is?
I thought it was different, because Lectio Divina, you quiet yourself and you read, and
right.
you just concentrate on a word.
So it's very different.
So it's different. One like you're doing, and the other God is doing.
Yeah, okay. The similarity here is that in Lectio Divina, you're reading scripture or something, and you come across a phrase or a word that kind of strikes you. And Teresa says, stop at that point and just think about what it was that grabbed your attention. Because that's the Holy Spirit trying to get your attention to that particular thing. So you look at that, you read it, you meditate on it, or whatever. So that word is the trigger when you're reading the scripture. But the trigger she's explaining here is something different, because it just takes you right out of your body and into a rapture with God Himself. So this, and she says it could be something you remembered, but it could be something you might have read, anything. Some trigger happens that the Holy Spirit causes you to remember. And then it says, okay, now we're going to go have a rapture here.
You could have that like in everyday life that's not a rapture. But, you know, you're like all of a sudden a thought comes to you, and then you're just like, you know, branches out to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I can't think of something.
Yeah, you get a word or something.
And then you're like,
and
oh,
you
yeah.
get a. It's real. It's more real. And the word, you fully understand it in like a minute, but you can't really explain it. But you understand it. It's not just a word anymore. Like you experience the word, something like that. Well, I never thought about that.
Well, I hit something else the other day, and it was something to do with the Bible, and it was, I can't even remember now.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When it's evading me again.
Yeah.
I always like the word becomes alive. Like, oh, you know, that you get a different meaning, and it's like not just, it's not just a word on paper. Mm-hmm. You know, it's...
Yeah, everything associated with it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when God told Adam to name the animals. Okay, they came before him, and he would name the animal because he could see the essence of the animal. Mm-hmm. So he would give it a name that that represented the essence of what that was. Mm-hmm. And it's like what you're saying here. You see the word, but you see the essence of the word. Yeah. The all, everything that that word means comes out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you're
saying. Like a meaning.
Yeah.
A meaning, and it's real and alive.
Joseph Martin that was talking about people who always come up and they say, "I have a word from the Lord for you." And
sure you do.
He said, I listened to it a little bit, and he said, "You know, that's strange. I spoke with him myself this morning, and your name didn't come up."
So bad.
You know.
Well, the other thing, too, you were talking about when you have a word, and a lot of times you might experience something, or culturally there's a whole bunch of experiences around it. So if somebody says 9/11, it's not just 9/11.
Yeah.
It's everything comes up around that word.
Yeah.
And,
Right. It's not like that's natural level, the other spiritual. Mm-hmm. But that's,
So 6, 4, 4, and 5. In section 4, Teresa tells us the door between the sixth dwelling place and the seventh dwelling place is never closed, indicating that the soul goes back and forth between them as God draws the soul to himself. She will also tell us the doors to the other dwelling places will be closed. So once you get to the...
You don't go backwards.
You don't go backwards once you get to the sixth dwelling place. And so that door... So it's kind of like there's an open doorway between the two, and God will periodically draw you into the seventh dwelling place, give you that experience, mm-hmm. and then send you back to the sixth. And each time he brings you into the seventh, it's a new experience. He's teaching you something new about himself or about yourself. And so you have this whole series of experiences where you gain in knowledge of him and yourself just by infused knowledge that he gives you. He doesn't sit you down and say, "Okay, now we're going to have a lesson 5, you know, and explain it all to you. It's just infused knowledge that you get in just a few seconds.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Once you reach the 6th or 7th, could you ever commit a mortal sin and go backwards all the way back?
You could turn back on your own.
Yeah.
But the devil cannot make you turn back.
Okay.
Because you always have free will.
Yeah.
You can always say, "I've had enough of this.
Yeah.
I can't take any more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too lazy to keep going.
Yeah.
I'm too afraid to keep going," and just quit praying.
Do you think that happens?
Not much.
Yeah.
But she would always pray that God wouldn't forget her.
Right.
And allow her to forget him.
Right.
And that always seems strange to me. After going through all this, God is going to forget you?
Mm-hmm.
But then she says some places he does that intentionally to test you.
Yeah.
But I mean, why would you ever lose that?
You know? I don't think he would forget you. He might just be invisible to help you reach out more to him.
Well, then you think of Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
She had that long drive. I don't know if that's similar, but...
Yeah, dark night, right,
mm-hmm.
where you don't feel the presence. Yeah. Well, he's testing you, too. Do you love me, even though I'm not giving you all this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness.
So in section 5, Teresa speaks about secrets that God shares with the soul in this betrothal encounter. She also speaks about imaginative and intellectual visions. Now, keep in mind that in the chapter 6, she's talking about the betrothal stage. In dwelling place 7 is the marital stage. And so you keep going back and forth between being engaged and being married. And so I'm not sure this is so valid, because marriage is kind of final.
She was a nun.
Yeah. So she speaks about the imaginative and intellectual visions. God will share with the soul things about heaven and give the soul imaginative visions. These are like persistent dreams you don't forget. So one of the characteristics of these things that God does is that you don't forget them. If they come from the devil, you'll forget them. But if they come from God, you don't forget them. And that's one of the ways you know that's really from God. She says it is the soul, the soul is able to tell of them afterwards, for these remain so impressed on the memory that they are never forgotten. But when the visions are intellectual, the soul doesn't know how to speak of them. So she's talking about the difference between imaginative visions and intellectual visions. But for there must be some visions during these moments that are so sublime that it's not fitting for those who live on this earth to have the further understanding necessary to explain them. However, when the soul is again in possession of its senses, it can say many things about these intellectual visions.
I had something happen, and I've had this happen before. And I tell my husband or family members or friends, and I don't know what they are. I call them like deja vu. Oh, and I had one. We were in Florence, and I had seen it before. It was raining, and I was with a group of people, and this woman with a flower in the back of her hair, and I knew it wasn't here. It was someplace else. Mm. And my daughter called me. And it was something going on, and she wanted my attention. And it happened. Mm-hmm. We were in Florence, it was downpouring. We found this guide. There's a guide for every city you go to. And it was a massive crowd because it's downpouring, and everybody's underneath this scaffolding thing. And my daughter called me all the way from the States about the cat. I'm like, I can't even hear her. But I was like in the middle of that, go, I've done this before.
I hate that too. Is that something exciting?
And I always think, is that God telling me that this is, I was meant to be doing this, that I was meant to be on this trip?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I just sit there and I go, I don't understand it, and what does that mean? And the other time it happened, I've had it happen a bunch of times, but the ones that I really, really remember is I had one where I was at my mother-in-law's, my in-law's house, and we sleep in the living room, on the pull-out couch, and she came down in the middle of the night and someone had died. And she's waking Mark up and myself up to tell us. And, you know, she says something like, I'm all alone now. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, you're not. You have us. Mm-hmm. And that happened. And we were there for, I don't even remember what it was, mm-hmm. years ago. And we were in the phone ring in the middle of the night and she came down to say that her brother died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I've seen
those
this
too. I don't know what that is.
And what is it?
I don't know.
Yeah. And then I'm like, you know, I don't think I've lived this life before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope.
So, how can you explain it?
There are neurological explanations, but the problem is that they come from people who are not believers.
Yeah.
So they try to describe things and say, well, you know, you had this kind of chemical flowing through your brain at this time. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's funny, it doesn't happen often. Nothing deep. Oh, I can be sitting in church, and maybe in the spring, and I get the same feeling as when I was in the convent up in Spark Hill in 1957. I literally feel like I'm there. Mm-hmm. And I go, nice feeling, because I liked it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, maybe that's a gift from God.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. And it happens. I laugh. God has a sense of humor. I'm sitting on my side porch, and I can look out. And this Carol says, Mike, you got no neighbors. You got the one next to you. She works. She's a bus driver, and then she's dating the guy two houses away. But they're getting married. So, and then to my right, I have the lady that had the cancer and then the heart attack. And I do go over to her, you know, and she's in the wheelchair. But, like, there's no, I see grandma next door, you know. But I sit there on my side porch, and there's those bushes, the trees that go up to the heavens. And it's like I feel like I'm literally sitting on my porch in the Adirondacks. Mm-hmm. And I look up, and I see all the trees, and I go, I feel like I'm there.
Did you have really happy times there?
Oh, God, I can't go back and look. We have a house 35 years. I mean, it's like my heart's up here.
Yeah.
And I can't look at the photograph albums. It's too sad.
Yeah. Mm.
It really, you know, but maybe it's the nice memories are down there.
Yeah, that's good.
People have deja vus.
Yeah, deja vus.
Deja vus.
That's what I call them, deja vus.
Nope, never been here before.
Mine's funny. Yeah, mine is funny.
I don't know.
Because I did play tricks on my mind once. And not crazy, but when I got ringing of the ears 11 years ago, I mean, three noises at once, it was funny. I laughed. But
it's Holy Trinity.
Bells, hissing, and typewriter.
Terrible.
So I told her a Carmelite nun, and she said, don't worry. She said, I've had it for 40 years. She said, you'll get used to it. But I pretended. I accepted it. I said, Lord, this is what you want. So when I accepted it, but I pretended it was normal, I said, this is my normal head. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's normal. I didn't keep going back and saying, I wish it was different. I don't remember when it was quiet. Mm-hmm. But it worked. I mean, it worked within a week. It's like normal. This is what I hear. I wasn't fighting it, maybe.
Yeah, that's accepted it.
Mm-hmm. That was probably it.
That it was God's will, and then, you know, God sending us stuff that...
Yeah, I mean,
whatever.
It's better now. Yeah. It's much better, thank God. It's always the radiator noise, but it's getting low.
Well, the hearing aids, you said, helped.
It's amazing. With the hearing aids, they put it in, and I don't hear all that stuff. Yeah. I just hear very slight. Yeah. That's a blessing.
Mm-hmm. What are some examples in Scripture of persistent dreams that the dreamer did not forget?
Joseph.
I was just thinking Joseph.
The two Josephs.
And Jacob. Jacob had Joseph's Jacob's ladder that was going up and up and down from earth to heaven or something.
Yeah.
Did you
the Pharaoh's dreams.
The Pharaoh, yeah.
And
Pharaoh's
dreams. That Joseph had to interpret for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, about the cows and the grain.
Yeah.
Dreams.
Yeah.
Joan of Arc had visions, not dreams, right? She had visions of this.
Joan
of Arc, I think, visions.
And then St. Joseph with his dream about being married to Mary. And then getting out of Dodge, you know, and going up to Egypt.
Yeah.
And,
you don't forget those things.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So there are persistent dreams like that. Usually you forget a dream very quickly after you wake up. Mm-hmm. I had one the other night that I have not forgotten, but I have no idea what it means.
What is it?
What?
Oh, well, you don't
have to share it. Oh, no, Mary Beth and I went to this farm, and I have no idea where it was. And I had my vest on, and I took it off while we were there, but it was white. It wasn't blue like mine really is. Mm-hmm. And then I forgot it there. So then we left, and so we had to go back to find it. And I was walking up to the farm, and the farmer was looking kind of mean. And I said, I forgot my vest, I have to find it. He said, well, it's back here somewhere. And Mary Beth said, well, I think I know where it's going to be. Why don't you go on home and I'll get the vest to bring it home. And I said, how are you going to get home, you know? And so I said, well, I'll wait for you, and we'll go home together. And then I woke up. So I have absolutely no idea what that meant. But it was a very persistent dream, because I didn't forget it. Usually I forget all my dreams.
Yeah.
So if I see a white vest somewhere, I'm going to know something's going on.
If we see it, we'll let you know.
Yeah, if you see a white vest, let me know.
Yeah, I was born in New York City. And persistent, my whole life, I get these dreams that I'm with John, and we're at a hotel in New York, and then I'm walking the streets by myself, and I can't get back to the hotel, and I can't remember the number of the hotel, what street it was on.
Oh.
But then eventually I find that, then I go into the hotel, and I can't remember the room number. And it's always the same hotel, and it's always the same area in New York.
I almost think it's like you're looking for your husband, but he's gone.
Constantly I get that dream. And dreams have meanings. You know, it's weird.
Yeah.
Well, when do you find the room number?
Once or twice I shouldn't say. I don't know if I've ever found that number.
One day you will.
Or the room.
about intellectual visions. Is Teresa saying you cannot explain how they happen, but you do understand and can explain what they teach? That's what it sounds like she's saying, right? So you gain some kind of knowledge from God through these visions. You can't explain how they happen or what they are, but you know what you were taught, and you can then explain what you were taught. You get this infused knowledge during the process.
God's going to explain all this when we see him.
Yep.
I said, God's going to explain all of this, and he's going to tell you what all that meant, too.
Some will be like, oh, so involved. I thought, why am I reading all this stuff?
Well, this kind of goes back to a lot of things. You have faith and you have senses. Mm-hmm. And people are seemingly addicted to their senses and just don't believe things that they can't feel, touch, smell, taste.
Yeah, or, a lot of scientists are like that.
Huh?
A lot of scientists like that. All they believe is what they can put in a laboratory.
It doesn't exist unless I can measure it.
Yeah.
And that's...
And that's what college kids are.
Oh, yeah.
It's what?
That's what college kids are growing up with now.
Yeah,
yeah,
oh,
yeah. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And probably always have, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So college teachers.
Well, it is 10:30. We're going to stop here. We'll pick up with 6461 next time. Anybody have any final thoughts before we...
Do you have another list of questions?
Yes. You don't have the section two?
I can forward it because I just printed my next bunch up.
Here is.
You probably send it in an email.
Here is part two.
Ooh, we got our new printer, but it's not hooked up yet.
I will. Sure. I will print out another one for myself. Anybody else need a copy?
Nope, got it.
You need a copy. Okay.
She needs a copy.
I think you sent one.
Yeah, need a copy? Okay.
Okay. She wants part one.
I know you sent me something, but I forgot.
Part one and part two, okay.
Okay, thanks.
Do you? I'll give you part two already.
I have
okay.
This.
All right.
Okay. So is this part one, the one we're doing right now?
Okay. See all you guys later. See you next week.
Thank you,
Jim.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great week. Have a blessed week.
But yeah, this is chapter four.
Does Mary Beth have any appointments next week?
Yeah. Next week she has her fourth and final Red Devil.
Is that Wednesday and Thursday?
Wednesday
again?
And Thursday, yeah.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'll put out an email for that.
You guys went to that big talk, didn't you, this weekend? Yes. Was it fun?